This week on Rational Urbanism, cluelessness. I'm Steve Schultes, and this is Rational Urbanism. First of all, if you're going to have a podcast and you're going to entitle it Cluelessness, make sure you know how to spell cluelessness beforehand, because you don't want to misspell cluelessness, because then people might think you're clueless. In a discussion of cluelessness, I have to start out with an experience that has nothing to do with urbanity. But I'm going to start with it anyway. It reminds me of a time, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. I was at an art auction, not like an upscale art auction, but, you know, the kind that's in a barn, basically, where you're sitting around with people looking at other people's junk. And it just so happens that some of the junk that's up at auction is art. And I bid on and won, you know, I bid $5 or something, and I got a really nice reproduction of a portrait by Diego Velázquez. I assume it's a reproduction. Otherwise, you know, I've been sitting on a gold mine. But it's what I believe is a reproduction of a portrait of Prince Baltazar Carlos by Diego Velázquez. And a friend of mine, maybe more of an acquaintance, afterwards said, "Hey, really good get on that one. That's a beautiful frame. You know, you just pop that picture out, put something else in there, it'll be really nice." And I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pop out the portrait by perhaps the greatest painter of all time, Diego Velázquez, and put in maybe, I don't know, some paint-by-number thing that maybe I do. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about when I'm talking about cluelessness. Well, I happen to be, and this actually happened months ago, I just haven't gotten around to it. I was at a social gathering which was sponsored by the Urban Land Institute. Now, these are people who a year ago, I have to admit, I hadn't heard of. But in looking into some issues around the downtown and parking, some people turned me on to their work. And it's like, wow, these people are great. These people really get cities. And so they had a social, and it seemed like it would be a cool thing to go to. So I went. Now, I didn't know a lot of people that were there, and I'm not really the best at socializing. I mean, I love being in front of a microphone like this, and I love sitting in the back of the room and listening. I don't like that little, you know, that little kind of in-between thing where you're supposed to converse and think of witty things to say. I'm a teacher, so I like being in charge, and I've worked in radio, so I don't get stage fright. I love talking. You put me, literally, I remember being in front of, you know, 6,000-7,000 people at hockey games when the radio station I worked for was one of the sponsors of the hockey team. And, you know, I just love that, being on the ice and talking and all that. So put me in front of 5,000 people, awesome. Or let me sit in the back of the room. But, you know, put me in a party where I have to figure out what's appropriate to say, and I have to make sure that, you know, I'm entertaining. Because, like, right now, I can be boring. That's fine. You can just turn me off. You know, you're not offended. I'm not offended. Who cares? But in that, you know, when you're face-to-face with someone and you can see, oh, you've just offended them. Or, oh, you just said something that they disagree with completely, but they're afraid to say it. Or you used a word they don't understand and now they're embarrassed. Something, I always have this feeling when I'm at a party that I'm saying the wrong thing and doing the wrong thing. And I'm sure, actually, that's probably me at my most perceptive in getting that. In any case, so I'm hanging out, talking to people, and I'm nobody, but they think I'm somebody because I'm at this social. So this one guy he's older than dirt. No, well, older than I am. And at this point, I'm 48. No, wait, birthday this month, 49. And so if I'm saying this guy's older, then he's pretty old. And he's bragging. Now, this is at a social for the Urban Land Institute, which, by the way, I think they were thinking like they get a younger, hipper crowd. But Springfield doesn't do young and hip really well at this point. There are a few people there, I'm sure, who are young and hip. There are more people there who are like old and need hip replacement. But, you know, either way, this old guy's talking to me, and this is what he brags about. He's like, yeah, I was key to getting that house torn down, you know, the one next to the Starbucks, so we could expand the parking lot and make the drive-through longer. It's like, yeah, really, dude? That's awesome, because, you know, that's what we're all about here in cities. What we got to do is tear down more useful crap and build more space for storing cars. So I was like, okay, so you're proud of this? Awesome. I actually went down, took some pictures. I'm going to post them on my blog. Yeah, literally, I looked at it, and when you look at where the curb cut was for the parking lot initially and where it extends out to now and where you can see the little space, you know, where people used to cross the tree belt to get into their beautiful little house. You see that space, and it's six parking spaces and, you know, an expanded drive-thru. I mean, there was a drive-thru. It was just, you know, I guess, I don't know if the turn was too sharp or, you know, not enough cars could be waiting in the line or what it was. And then what it is, I took a picture of the house next to it. I was figuring that'd be something like the house that they tore down. And you can see it's a beautiful little house. And they tore it down for six parking spaces and an expanded drive-thru, and he's proud of it. Then he tells me what building his offices are in. And it's as you leave the downtown, where every single building is in the right place. Not all of them are beautiful, but every single one goes right up to the sidewalk, and they understand the building typology that's appropriate. This is a place where they tore down a beautiful Catholic church, and what they put in was a well-built brick building, and I think that was sort of their nod to the great architecture of downtown Springfield, was that they built it in brick, and they added some sort of, you know, a little bit of concrete here and there, a little bit of cement to make it look decorative. Like, ooh, look, a cement circle, and look, a cement triangle. But, you know, it's better than nothing. I've seen worse buildings. But the bottom line is, this building is set way back in the midst of a parking lagoon. So it's just outside of the downtown. And it's the very first building that says, hey, guess what? We wish we were a suburb. I mean, we're kind of just a suburb that sucks, but we're trying to be you. But we're never going to be as good as you. We're just going to be bad at what we're supposed to do. And again, and this guy's got the name of his real estate company now on the side of this building in horrible, gaudy, atrocious backlit letters. Just as proud as can be of, you know, being the major tenant in a building that does it completely wrong and having tore down a house to put in six parking spaces and expand a drive-through for a Starbucks. And then as we're talking about the possibility of MGM coming to the city, and I'm talking about how, you know, it's outward facing and it's permeable. It looks like a bit of new urbanism. It looks like Andres Duany could have designed it. Of course, he has no idea who Andres Duany is, and he doesn't know what permeability means, because this is a guy who just wants to build, you know, concrete, the equivalent of a concrete tent in the middle of a parking lagoon. That's his idea of real estate development. And what he tells me is that he's excited about it, but what he's most excited about is that he's hoping that he can somehow get an airwalk, a skyway, for those of you who live outside the Northeast, from his office in the top of his building into the parking garage. So that, now keep in mind, he has a parking lagoon around his building that's pretty much empty all the time. But what he wants is an airwalk so that he can leave his office, get into his car, and get out of the city without being, you know, outside. Because you might meet people and have to talk to them. Which, hey, I get. I just explained that. But again, you want to talk about cluelessness. This is a level of cluelessness that goes beyond, you know, anything that I could have imagined before going to a meeting of the Urban Land Institute. Now, I understand cluelessness. From time to time, each and every one of us has been the clueless one. I remember the time when I was living in southern Spain, I went to a camp which was being run by the Red Crescent Organization of Morocco that was, you know, making life more comfortable for pilgrims who were crossing over from Spain into Morocco to celebrate Ramadan. And I looked at their jeeps and I looked at the license plates and I said, hey, that's interesting, because on your license plates, you know, you have your alphabet there, but you use our numbers. And the guy just looked at me and said, Arabic numerals? So look, we've all had experiences like that, and that's okay. The problem is when you run into that sort of cluelessness among the people who are supposed to be leading your community. You know, here in this city, we have a problem, which is that most of the people that run our most important cultural institutions choose to live outside the city. Now, obviously, they have reasons for doing that, and that's exactly the sort of thing that the city needs to work on changing so that those people feel energized enough about the city to live here. But the main problem with that is they tend to live outside the city. That means they get used to a suburban mentality, and they don't understand what it takes to make a city better. It reminds me of the experience I had roughly 15 years ago when the local museums organization, which is, you know, it really is the crown jewel culturally of not just the city of Springfield, but greater Springfield. And I mean, it's just magnificent. At this point, it's five museums, two of which are art museums, two history museums, one of which is closed right now, but I think they're thinking of redeveloping into a Dr. Seuss memorial museum, I assume some sort of a children's museum as well, and a science museum on a beautiful campus. It is amazing. It is what other museums try to be. But it was interesting. In 1990 or so, the city of Springfield adopted a master plan, and the museums kind of got behind it at first, and they actually moved one of their buildings from an unusual place in the middle of their campus, sort of in the middle of a parking lot, and they moved it to the edge of this street, Edwards Street, because the idea behind the master plan was to create more or less on Edwards Street that which existed on the next street over, Mattoon Street, which is one of the few residential streets in the downtown, which is just perfect. It is mostly French Second Empire townhouses with an apartment building, and they're impeccably maintained for the most part, and the architecture really is to die for. When you're there, it looks like you're somewhere on one of the nicest streets on Beacon Hill. That's how nice it is. And the idea, and I think it's a great one still, is to take advantage of the location of that street and its proximity to the museum's campus, and to take the area in between and turn it into something like a replica of Mattoon Street, but even closer to the museums. And of course, the idea then is to make it a residential street. Now, at the time of the plan, there were only two apartment buildings, one on either end of the street across the street from one another. And the rest of the street was surface parking, most of which was completely underdeveloped. And when I say underdeveloped, I'm talking dirt. And again, the museums moved their security building, which is actually a very beautiful old building, onto Edward Street. And you could tell the idea was then to say, okay, let's get some developers to come in here. And look, I mean, this is for downtown Springfield, this is not going to be a hard sell. You're protected, as it were, on one side by Mattoon and on the other side by the great institution that is the Springfield Museums. And that's the kind of thing that's going to make people who are interested in urban living maybe aren't quite ready to take that plunge into being urban pioneers. It's going to make it feel much less like they have to be, you know, John Wayne and circle the wagons when they've got a beautiful, successful street on one side and on the other side, again, one of the great institutions of the city. So what do the museums do? Well, the very next year, a local real estate manager decides to retire, and one of his beautiful, wonderfully maintained apartment buildings happens to be the one on Edward Street that abuts the museum property. And what they decide to do is to take it over and tear it down. It doesn't matter to them that some of their employees, obviously they're let's say they're lower level employees. None of the executives and nobody on the executive board lived in that apartment building, but some of their employees did. And that made it a very nice place to live because, of course, the commute, very quick. No need to own a car. It's a walkable neighborhood and you can walk to work. Spectacular. Nope. They need to tear it down because I think they're worried that the proximity to, you know, working class poor people is going to turn people off the museum experience. Now, I try to explain to them that actually it's just the kind of thing that's going to make visiting the museums an even better experience because it's going to feel even more like a campus that, again, if you've ever been to Madrid, the Sorolla Museum, Joaquin Sorolla, probably the best of the Spanish impressionists, he left his house in Madrid as a museum. And so the city has built up around it, but the home itself as the museum and the grounds of the home are just an incredible oasis in the middle of the city. And frankly, the more tight and compact the city around the campus, that is the quadrangle in Springfield, the more impressive the quadrangle itself is. But not only did they not buy that, what they did do is also buy the dirt lot across the street, and they paved it over and made it a more or less permanent surface parking lot. They tore down the apartment building and did nothing with it. It's a big lawn. A lot of people think, oh, well, that's beautiful. Well, not really. It's completely unused. 99% of the time, I think one time I saw a festival or something, and they happen to put a tent there. But, you know, the quadrangle really doesn't need that. What it really, you know, what the downtown needs, what the city needs to be successful is more people. And having that apartment building there and those two apartment buildings across from each other, and it's kitty corner, that creates just the kind of environment you need for putting up the type of townhouses, again, that people would buy. And then you bring in, who knows, 15, 20 individuals or couples or families of means who are living in a beautiful place in close proximity to, again, the cultural jewel, at least of the greater Springfield area, if not of Western Massachusetts. And that's the kind of thing that can help your cultural institution soar. You know, it's the kind of thing that makes you special. But the leadership didn't understand that. And again, when you're dealing, whether it's with people who lead cultural institutions or people who make real estate transactions, if they don't understand the differences that exist between a suburban typology and an urban typology, they're going to make bad decisions, not because they're bad people, but because they're clueless. I'm Steve Schultes, and this is Rational Urbanism.